Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to Phil Andrews, the former managing editor of the Guelph Mercury. It was exactly 1 year ago that the Guelph Mercury published for the last time, Friday, January the 29th, 2016, leaving the Royal City without a daily newspaper that had chronicled its life for almost 150 years. 1 year later, we'll look back at what happened, why it happened, and if it could have happened differently. Still missing the Merc is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. I'll begin with a quote. I took the editor job at the Mercury in part because it had a reputation in the industry as a risk-taking journalistic product that punched above its weight, even when that meant taking the odd shiner. When I arrived, I had a dream of helping to lead a newsroom that was so dynamic it would spur such circulation growth that the paper would expand its staffing to the point it needed to leave behind its place of business on McDonnell Street. It turns out, I presided over a proud team that did plenty of dynamic things and has come to have to leave behind the newspaper building. But the departure is the result of shrinking returns, not ever increasing ones. End quote. Phil Andrews wrote that in the final edition of the Guelph Mercury last year, and it said a lot of things about the paper. The Mercury was a multi-award-winning institution. Right up until its very end, it was bringing home hardware for its reporting. It's also a statement of intent. When Andrews arrived at the Mercury a decade earlier, it was a much bigger operation than it was the day it shut down. But still, Andrews wanted to make it bigger. It was not meant to be, though. Growth is a foreign concept, period, for most media outlets these days, and the closure of the Mercury, though shocking, wasn't all that surprising. So on this first anniversary, I thought I would invite Andrews onto the show to relive those hard final days of the paper, give us a look behind the scenes as to how the decision was made, and add his insights to the hindsight and consider all the various ways the Mercury might have been saved, including some of Andrew's own ideas. More broadly, we look at the media landscape in Guelph and how I and others have tried to fill the void, tilting at windmills and trying to make media matter in the Royal City. So let's all now remember the Mercury. I caught up with Phil Andrews last week in studio. Phil Andrews, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
We are sadly coming up on the one-year mark of the closure of the Mercury. And not to revisit bad memories, but I was wondering, and I think you've probably talked about this before, but you know, to set up what we're talking about, where were you when you learned that Metroland was going to shut the Mercury down, and how did you learn it, and what were your initial thoughts?
Well, it came as a out of the blue surprise to me, in spite of looking at financials and whatnot for years. I was given the benefit of being brought down on the sort of Friday before the Monday when the news was otherwise released to staff and to the community, and basically given the weekend to ponder the bad news that was to come. And I think I appreciated that. I think it was good for me as well to be ready to support my coworkers and to be ready to confront sort of the really big emotional response that the community generated when the news came out.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there was an episode of The Office where it looked like the Scranton branch was going to close and Michael Scott was kind of going around the office and like talking under his breath, like, no, nothing matters. And I wonder, you know, were you like just super professional? You were able to wear the poker face all weekend and talking to your reporters and your staff?
I think they needed to have it unfold from the people who needed to unpack the news for them in the appropriate way, so it didn't leak out and didn't sort of wound with wrong messaging and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I was able to keep sort of the messaging circle tight to my family. And the approach of I remember sort of walking in from my car from the parking lot that day and giving a message to myself, just keep the feet moving, just keep the feet moving. Mm-hmm. And that was a day I'll remember. That was a really hard day, and it was a great team we were with, too. I mean, that was socially, the Mercury was a family that took a lot of pride in what we did and thought we sort of punched above our weight. And we really had each other's backs, too. So a significant aspect of the Mercury closing was the end of days for a little family as well.
I imagine you said it was a surprise, perhaps not a great surprise, but I think it's always a surprise, no matter how much we hear about the doom and gloom about newspapers and the numbers. But in terms of the rationale, I think a lot of people just think it was the subscriptions and the advertising revenue. What was the justification they gave to you?
There's a bit of a mythology that I think was communicated by Metrolinx, probably strategically, that the Mercury was not a sustainable business. Certainly, the trends were that the bottom line had changed a great deal just in the time that I had arrived there. However, I mean, the Mercury made profit the last year of its operation, and I would have liked to have seen maybe a different strategic approach to managing the Guelph media market as a whole. Mm. Obviously, I'm not part of Metrolinx anymore, so I wasn't in on the discussions that gave rise to its closure. For years, I perceived the Mercury as somewhat protected because Metrolinx owned the Guelph Tribune as well.
Right.
And I sort of thought they looked at the media market as a whole, and they wanted to have a daily product that did certain things for certain advertisers, certain readers, and a weekly product that did certain things for certain advertisers, certain readers.
Right.
And it wasn't until things closed that I realized the threat to the Mercury was them owning the community paper as well. Mm. There's a logic to it. You can remove the cost associated with doing a daily newspaper, and you can anticipate that it's really hard to come in and produce a daily newspaper anymore for the cost of entry and whatnot.
Right.
And for advertisers wanting to continue to reach their market, the Tribune does a great job. I mean, it's a really good little paper, and as a community paper, but it goes to everyone's doorstep, and the Mercury. Or Metrolinx, rather, was, I think, effectively able to fold a lot of its Mercury-related revenue just into the Tribune and not sort of change its cost of production costs all that much associated with the Tribune. So,
right.
I can see the genius behind the game.
They were playing 3D chess, and they didn't choose the strategy you thought they would have went with, which was the value of having the two papers in the same market.
Yeah, I think as well, I mean, I'm not, as you alluded to, the print industry is really facing big headwinds and has for a while. I think I wish I had been able to articulate to folks interested in hearing it a different strategy, and I had been for months leading up to, you know, the news day where the mic dropped, where I thought the day would come where the Guelph Mercury print edition would cease, and I'd be the managing editor of GuelphMercury.com. Mm. I also thought there was different ways they could, there were different ways you could have managed the Guelph media market if sort of I was the Uber boss of Metrolinx that wasn't done. There could have been different ways to, I think, have maintained a Guelph Mercury print product that might not have seen it be a daily.
Right.
But I think, the GuelphToday.com has done a really interesting business model job in this market, I think in part because there was a void created in the way they unplugged the Mercury that that gave an opening to being sort of that news site that had currency in this market. And I think the GuelphToday.com jumped in there and now owns that, in my opinion, where had the Mercury been able to continue stewarding a website, I don't think they would have been able to do so, or at least do so as quickly as seems to have been come about.
It's the benefit of being able to focus on the one. When you're running the newspaper, you're doing a website and a newspaper at the same time, and it's like managing two different media entities at the same time.
Yeah, there used to be once upon a time when I was a newspaper editor, there was a there was a good school of thought about the news web game, and it said in any market you want to be the website that when people see smoke in the sky, you're the website they go to find out where the smoke's coming from, what it's all about. And the Mercury was that. I think GuelphToday.com is that now. And you know, that's a lost platform for Metroland. They're investing to try to get it back, but they had a better position of strength a year ago today.
Right. I think the shock to a lot of people wasn't that the paper closed. I think that it went from, it seemed to go from zero to close. And I've had conversations with people who are like, well, wouldn't it have made more sense business-wise for Metroland to, like, maybe fold the Mercury into the Waterloo Region Record, where you have a Guelph Mercury section? Because, no disrespect to you, mm-hmm. but when you get past, like, page A6 of the Mercury in its last days, it was a lot of the star wire stuff and that you would find in the record. So, you know, wouldn't it have made more sense, and hindsight being 2020, mm-hmm. you know, to have the Guelph Mercury section and record, you pick up the 10,000 Guelph Mercury subscribers and you increase the subscriber base of the record at the same time. And, you know, you still have your daily paper. It's just, you know, folded into this new sort of Frankenstein paper, I guess.
Yeah. There's a lot of hindsight plays that you'd sort of like to kick the tires on that, yeah. That you can't do. One thing that was interesting, our readers were somewhat allergic to us looking too much like the record and really let mm-hmm. us hear that they didn't want Kitchener, they wanted Guelph. And
right.
there was we did some research years back about going back to being a true morning delivery newspaper in ways that the Mercury hadn't been. And, you know, in terms of the footprint where we delivered the newspaper at the time of that research, there were 7 dailies that sold into the Guelph, into that geographic area.
Right.
And I think we were, you know, the brand was intensely local. We were trying to deliver something that, you know, yeah, we weren't going to be the Star, we weren't going to be the Globe, we weren't going to be the Record, we weren't going to be the Spectator, we weren't going to be the National Post, but we were going to be this local thing.
Right.
Look, I think different decisions could have been made. I mean, the Tribune was out of one building that was paying rent, and we were in a great big box that was had lots of capacity for taking them on.
Right.
I think the market could have been managed differently, but, you know, decisions were made. I'm not sure the viability of sort of being the Guelph section within the record, but as you say, hindsight's 50-50, 2020. It would be neat to see how things might have played had they transpired differently, but that didn't happen.
I do find it interesting what you said about what Guelph Today has done, and I do wonder if you've had thoughts about what you would have done differently. I imagine you could have. I mean, you were the managing editor, so a certain amount of it falls on your shoulders, even though a tremendous amount of it falls out of your control, you know, with the market and the internet and on all these other things that have changed the industry across the board. But how about your own personal hindsight?
Well, I think the Mercury's subscription base shrunk over the years. I think the Mercury suffered somewhat from a consolidation and a centralization of certain functions within Metroland. There wasn't a lot of horsepower given to selling the Mercury in the Mercury market either, and that mm-hmm. that came to wound its subscription line. I mean, you look at other newspapers that you come across, and like the Toronto Star, they're great about bulking their product, and you rent a car, you get a Toronto Star, you drop by the Hershey Center to be at a soccer game and they've got a rack of Toronto Stars take. If you stay at a hotel out of town, there's a Toronto Star sort of way open your door.
Right.
That's a bulk game, but it's a game you have to get into to be in the daily thing, to keep your numbers at a certain level so that you still have a value proposition on the audited spreadsheet to sort of engage advertisers to want to do biz with you. And I don't think the Mercury paid enough attention to the selling of the Mercury as a subscription product. The other thing, I mean, in terms of what I might have articulated as a different vision. You know, as I said, I think the Mercury could have been the GuelphMercury.com as the new brand, and maybe looked at, and this wouldn't have been popular at the outset, but I think it would have been a product that would have had some traction. Publish a maximum size Mercury on Saturdays. That was a big weekend read. The content of that wasn't something you put online preceding it,
right.
And it was a contextual sort of inch wide, mile deep kind of product.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, you were trying to be sort of like the Guelph Today for the rest of the week. So you'd be an mm-hmm. online newspaper that produced a great weekend read. And I think somewhere in there, that might have been a vehicle that did better stuff in a spreadsheet way, too.
Which is the model La Presse went to.
Yeah, there are a few in the market. I mean, the Detroit Free Press calls itself a daily newspaper, but it's daily in an online sense, sort of half the week, and it's online all the time. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can land in a place that extends the life of a print product. I mean, it's still a comfort food that people miss, and mm-hmm. I think there was an opportunity. I really do think there was an opportunity to continue a print play that went deeper than current offerings do right now.
And I talk a lot about that with the media too. That there's tremendous upheaval. Old forms are kind of going away, but in that there's also tremendous opportunity. You know, there's no right answer to how to make this work yet. So you have the comfort and the space to try anything, because there's no magic remedy to any of this yet. We don't know what the media landscape will really look like once this upheaval settles down, you know, over the next 10, 20 years.
Oh, I agree. I mean, and the arrival of new media forms has delivered products that are really compelling and deliver a sense of value that previous consumers of media didn't receive. I mean, it's live blogging, live tweeting, those sorts of things are terrific. I mean, I've enjoyed some of the work you've done sort of covering City Hall budget stuff, and it's great to have that immediacy be a quality that you can count on as a deliverable from media.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't come at the cost of sort of losing having someone sitting in court every day for the meaningful,
right,
you know, Michael Sona trial or... and for every minute of it. It shouldn't come at the expense of doing computer-assisted reporting. It shouldn't come at the expense of having freedom of information type value-added investigative work happening in your local market, which I'm not saying it has happened, but I've noticed an absence of the volume of that,
right,
with the Dismerits of the Mercury.
Yeah, if you're sitting in court every day, you're, like, something major isn't going to happen once a day, which is kind of what the internet sites kind of run on, is the clicks and something new every hour on the hour. But newspapers had the patience to say, okay, you are the court reporter, and then when something major happens at court, we'll be ready, and that person will have the background and the subtext and the experience to know how to properly translate this for the reader.
Or you notice something that isn't the big story of the day having a development. You notice a story that's developing. Maybe it's a massive backlog in legal aid cases that mm-hmm. you just started seeing, you see by increments, and then you realize there's a really important story to tell here. But you don't get that without sort of having, my dad had a great line, he used to say, the best fertilizer is the farmer's boots on the field.
Mm.
And what he meant was, you got to be there, you got to watch it, you got to invest time in it. And we have a media market now that I think does a really credible job and a really professional job, but mostly invested in telling smoke in the sky type news. They're keeping up with the hard news of the day and the agenda news being offered by our institutions like school boards and City Hall and the university. But in terms of that sort of doing the journalism that requires an investment of time, that then leads to something that you're allowed to hit the pause button for the community and say, hey, something important in Guelph is happening.
Right.
We need to bring attention to this in a public way, in a decision-maker way, and here's context in a reporting way by which to digest what we're presenting.
We see the smoke in the sky today, but nobody's looking out for where the smoke in the sky is going to come from tomorrow or next week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've set up the, you know, sort of the underlying background of what happened. We talked about how you found out. I can't imagine that last day was very easy.
No, it was interesting. As Murphy's Law sort of has it, my wife had been on a long-planned out-of-the-country trip to spend with her folks, and I had my kids at home, and blah, 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 blah. I thought about bringing my kids on the last day to have them see stuff, but I chose not to do that because I thought there is... There's a real possibility that they're going to see some of my coworkers and maybe me having really some raw times. And I didn't want to be the person sort of giving the Dion Quintuplet treatment to my coworkers on a really hard day. That was a day that there was a lot of emotion. I'm super proud of the job on the last day journalistically. But yeah, everyone had their moment where they were a bit of a mess. The messaging of the community was funny too and largely misunderstood until the Mercury and the newsroom staff was gone. I mean, I still had people coming up on the last day giving me a blast for how could I close the newspaper down? And, you know, I had to, a diffuser for me was saying to people, look, I'm done on Friday too. Like, this is,
yeah,
I don't want this to happen, and I'm going to work soon. And people didn't appreciate that. And it was, it flabbergasted me to see how often I had to explain to someone quite emotional at the front desk that I had a good title on my business card, but this call wasn't mine. And in fact, this captain was going down with the ship.
I remember that on the last day too, there was the big gathering, or at 5 o'clock, community members came out to hug the building. I imagine there was a lot of appreciation on the part of you and the staff. But I wonder if in the back of your heads, you might have been wondering, where was this love last week? Because I wrote a piece about on Politico about Thomas Video closing and Mercury closing, both kind of bookmarking the last year, and how being in the store and people coming in saying, you know, oh, I'm going to miss this place. But the last time they rented a movie was like 2013 or 2014. And, you know, we tend to, when we hear the announcement of these things closing, and then the love comes out, and you're just like, well, where was the love yesterday?
Yeah, someone explained it to me as it was news that Uncle So-and-so has died, and you realize, oh, God, I didn't spend enough time with Uncle So-and-so, but I really love
that's
him.
Right.
Another powerful thing about that very Guelphish hug-off, send-off was, you know, I had the opportunity to speak at it, and was very emotional, but was looking around and sort of on the front landing of the Mercury were people who self-identified as sort of the Mercury. Mm-hmm. And it floored me to see how many people I didn't know. And you realize there's generations of people who worked there,
right,
delivered the Mercury, so on and so forth. I mean, it was part of who they were. And there's, it's interesting, there's a Mercury alumni group that I'm part of. Mm-hmm. We're actually trying to put out a book this spring called Guelph Mercury Rising. but it was neat to me at that moment to see all the people who said, I'm the Mercury too, and this hurts me. And right. I thought, that's neat. We are a big family. And so many people, I mean, there's a lot of 6 degrees of separation stuff in Guelph to say, yeah, I used to deliver the Mercury. Like, play that card somewhere and see how many people will say, yeah, well, if they didn't deliver the Mercury, someone in their family did, or their best friend did, and it was a lot of people's first jobs. Like, it was a neat, I mean, it was a 149-year-old local business, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty deep roots.
Absolutely. Did you take anything with you, like souvenir-wise?
I was given at the time that the newspaper did a redesign in 2007. I got a plaque or a framed front page of that. I've got that at home now. I obtained something from another staffer. He actually bought it at Ray's shop downtown, and it was an old-fashioned sort of stamp of the a Mercury plate before we got rid of compositors, sort of thing. So I don't have. I've got some artifacts. Oh, you know what? I got two. I went down to our delivery guy, and I got two Guelph Mercury newspaper carrier bags.
Nice.
And I don't know what I needed them for, but I'm happy I have them.
Do you look at the situation and wonder? Because one of the things I think I've struggled with is, do people want to pay for news? Do people understand its value? And just in terms of somebody's going to sit at City Hall, cover the news. But it comes back to me, one of the most ignorant things I read during the Mercury closing, and I want to get your opinion on this, is somebody read, it doesn't matter to me, I get the news from my phone. Mm-hmm. Like, their phone is this omnipresent thing that is, you know, going through the tubes and the wires and looking for news and then delivering it to you, like it knows you, like it's your friend giving you information. And it boggles my mind. And I think in so much as I too appreciate what the Guelph Today is doing, and I speak as a Guelph Today freelancer, but I do wonder at times if it abdicated some sense of responsibility from the community that the news is something we all have to pay for.
Yeah, good news. Good local news is costly to generate, and if you're doing it in a responsible way, you should also be assuming things like a cost of doing good journalism, getting sued once in a while, is stepping on some toes, is offending some advertisers, and I think for years the Daily Newspaper sort of took that value proposition and said, yeah, that's part of the cost of doing business well. It was interesting, you know, in terms of this idea to pay for news, there was an interesting development when the Moncton sniper was going around and there was a shooting of the RCMP officers that the daily newspaper of note in Moncton and the company associated with it, they refused to make their website go free. Mm-hmm. And they received a lot of criticism saying, you know, after the Boston bombing, the Boston Globe opened its up because it was just this public service aspect of journalism. And the company in question in New Brunswick said, hold on, like, there's a guy loose with a gun. Mm-hmm. We've got reporters giving minute to the minute reporting on this. Is that not worth a buck to you?
Like, yeah.
Is the value of their work worth no investment to you? No, the website wall stays up. And I thought, that's an interesting point of view.
Yeah.
It drove home for me that black-white divide in the discussion about, are you willing to pay for it? If we don't invest in journalism, it's going to erode,
mm-hmm.
and at a big cost.
Well, it was a ballsy move because you're practically daring someone to say, you know, I this is free. I want this for free in the midst of a situation where, yeah, I mean, it's a rare situation, at least in Canada, that you have reporters putting their lives on the line. But it just drives home the point that, you know, somebody is paying for this in some way. And, you know, we do have, I think we all do have an equal share of the ownership. And it's, like I said, that the ignorance of that one Facebook, it was on Facebook too, it was a Facebook post, just that, you know, oh, I get my news from my phone. Well, there's somebody putting it into your phone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, yeah. What are you up to now? I think people might be interested in, to know that you're not a hobo or...
not yet. In the immediate aftermath of the newspaper news breaking, I received an offer to try working in at Queen's Park for a ministry doing sort of media spokesperson type work, and that was I think that was good for me. I was really wounded when the newspaper wrapped up and really hurt, and thought I needed a change. I'm not sure you ever can close the door on doing journalism once you've done it and really made it your career, and was super proud of that. But that was a good place to land, just to debrief and breathe and get on a different learning curve and build mm-hmm. a different network. That's transitioned into doing some strategic communications work for a different provincial ministry. I'm not sure how far that journey is going to take. I feel really blessed to be where I am. It's interesting to be inside a government and see messaging as opposed to outside a government and seeing the messaging. I'm really I'm fortunate and hoping for continued good fortune professionally. It's a change, and I miss tons about the career that I was sort of forced to leave behind.
You were a newspaper man for a long time, but now, as you said, you're on the other side of it. Can you shut it off? Can you shut off that newspaper mentality when you're in those strategic communication meetings, and you're trying to message something? Does the newsman ever fire off, well, that's bullshit?
It ends up being interesting wiring that you have. I had the opportunity to go for some training on issues management and advanced issues management for the public service when I was working in Queen's Park, and I had this moment where I blurted something out during the training thing where they were sort of they were communicating scenario A, B, and C, and someone was saying, would you consider that a news story? And it was awful, and I yelled out, like, that's a great story. And all heads turned to look at me, and I realized I had to sort of off the subject say, like, you have to put yourself in the position of probably being a news director, a news editor, and saying, would that be of news value? And but it's that that moment of digesting what you see sort of floating in front of you in the river of working in my present place of employee, where you sometimes say, wow, that's a pretty compelling news story. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, I observe things too that I say, that's a really compelling news story that isn't getting told, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have your aha, but you also have your, well, that's a lost opportunity. It's a terrific thing that's happening that people ought to know about. And that happens from having had to wear, I mean, I was 20 plus years in the news game, and that comes with it a lot of tempering.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I speak for everyone that we're glad you're still on the river, even if you're not captaining the good ship Mercury anymore, which I think a lot of people still miss every day.
Hey, thanks, Adam. And as I said, community radio is a really important piece of the fabric of doing local media, and that comes from the investments of efforts and creativity and energy of folks like you, and applause to you, too.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck to you. And we'll be looking forward to that book, The Mercury Rising.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Once again, that was Phil Andrews. By now, you might have learned that Andrews isn't done with the Mercury yet, and neither has a small group of his former colleagues who have since formed the Guelph Mercury Alumni Writers Group, whose first volume, a collection of short stories called Guelph Mercury Rising, will be published later this spring through Vocamus Press. And that's all for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The theme music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPN Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is also a Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, see you next time.